Governor Cuomo has something called his energy highway. We are anticipating a large turnout, and we would love for as many people to come as possible.
So large a turnout that you had to change the venue, apparently, for this meeting.
This group was formed around the start of the year, end of last year, called the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition.
That if you're going to do all of that, the first thing that you need to do is demonstrate to us that it's actually necessary, that there really is no need.
This is Community Power, a monthly series of reports on the governor's energy highway, the popular resistance that it inspired, and the Cultural Resources Survey of Livingston.
Start at the bottom and you pick them from the ground, and you pick that tree clean all the way around. Then you set up your ladder and you climb up high, and you're looking through the leaves at the clear blue sky. Hey ho, makes you feel so fine, looking out across the orchard in the bright sunshine. Hey ho, makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree.
Today we have the first part of my interview with Dan Duthie and Haley Carlock of Scenic Hudson. Hi, this is Tom Masterson, and I'm speaking today with two members of the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition about the AC proceeding, or the transmission line proceeding that's going on at the state level right now. I'm speaking to Haley Carlock, Director of Environmental Advocacy for Scenic Hudson. Hi, Haley.
Hi.
And Daniel P. Duthie, who's an attorney with seven clients in the AC proceeding.
Good evening, Tom.
So, Daniel, who are you representing in the proceeding?
Well, I'm representing four towns: the town of Milan, the town of Claverack, town of Livingston, and the town of Pleasant Valley. Two, I'll call them citizen groups, for lack of a better description: Farmers and Friends for Livingston, and we have a farm. That is also a Walnut Grove farm. It's also involved, you know, as part of my clients.
So the first part of what the Public Service Commission, or PSC, is calling the technical conference happened a week ago on 2 days, the 20th and the 21st. And I've posted links to the videos of those day-long events on my blog. I guess we'll start with Dan. Could you just say a little bit about what the technical proceeding is as a part of the whole process, and what happened last week?
Well, I view the technical conference as a mechanism for the experts that are participating in this proceeding on behalf of the various parties to engage in a civilized dialogue to make sure that everybody understands the work that the other parties have done. And I'm going to let Haley explain HVSEC's experts and their presentation on visual and environmental impacts. So there was also a segment that was devoted to the construction costs of these various projects, which was so confusing, to say the least, that the next session on Friday, this Friday, July 31st, is designed to try to get the parties to understand better what the construction costs really represent, because some projects, for example, may not have the terminals included, some may have other items included, and what staff is trying to do is to put all of the projects on a comparable basis for comparison purposes. And I'm not sure we've succeeded in getting there yet, but that's what Friday is devoted to, trying to unravel that knot. So I'll let Haley now speak about the presentations on visual and environmental.
Sure. Thanks, Dan. So on the second day of the two-day technical conference last week, the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition had an opportunity to present the findings of our experts on visual and environmental impacts of the projects. And this was following on the first day, where the staff of the Department of Public Service presented their view on both sort of the electrical interface impacts of the projects, and then environmental, visual, and other impacts, and their ranking of the projects and evaluation of which projects should be excluded from further consideration. So we had Dr. Richard Smarden of SUNY ESF. He's a visual impact analyst and a certified environmental professional. And he did a landscape analysis of the transmission line corridors that would be impacted within the Hudson Valley, and looked at the impacts of all the proposals, in particular on sensitive visual areas such as scenic areas of statewide significance, riverfront areas, areas near parks or other places where a lot of people might congregate and more people than average might see the transmission lines and expect to be seeing instead some beautiful scenery, historic properties, et cetera. And so, you know, his analysis really keyed in on the fact that even though in many of these corridors we do already have some transmission lines, there's a cumulative impact in adding new towers, and in particular new towers that are either taller, wider, or, you know, strikingly different in design than what exists there now, really is a perceptible increase in visual impact. And then he focused on some of those really sensitive areas that some of the projects might impact, which includes Olana State Historic Site, the FDR Home and Library, and Valkill. There was a proposal that would have crossed right through that. Mm. Several scenic areas of statewide significance within the Hudson Valley. Several proposals directly impact the Hudson River and riverfront areas. And he also described how, you know, certain parts of the landscape of the Hudson Valley, and in particular open, flat agricultural landscapes, are more prone to impacts from, you know, projects that might otherwise not be as significant because you can view the lines from such a distance. And so he ranked the various proposals just qualitatively in terms of high, medium, and low. Our environmental expert, CC Environment and Planning, performed a similar exercise, but rather than looking at visual impacts, they focused on impacts to the ecosystem, including wetlands, sensitive habitats, significant coastal fish and wildlife habitats, endangered species impacts, and all of those sorts of things. And they looked in particular at intersections of the various line routes with, again, very significant natural communities, whether that's delineated and state and federally delineated wetlands, whether that's a known endangered species habitat, whether that's a significant natural community. They mapped those areas and really focused on, again, the comparative impacts of the projects, both based both on their location in comparison to these sensitive areas and the technologies they proposed to use. For example, a new project in a new right-of-way is, in general, going to have a more significant impact than a project that proposes reconductoring, which is basically stringing a new wire on the existing towers. And they also performed sort of a qualitative ranking comparatively of the projects from low, medium to high. And I guess the good news is that both of our experts' comparative rankings accorded very well overall with what the Department of Public Service staff evaluated the projects as. So they're pretty consistent in terms of finding certain projects to have the worst or highest level of impacts and others to have comparatively a lower level of impacts, although it's important to note that even projects that are ranked comparatively low may still have significant impacts that could prevent it from eventually being built.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. So how low is low?
Yeah, and again, it's a qualitative ranking, so it's difficult to say. And the low projects certainly are less impactful than some of the proposals that would just have, you know, such a dramatic impact. But, you know, even reconductoring, which, you know, seems at first glance to be relatively benign, hey, who's going to know if they put a different wire on the same line, sure, is not without its impact. Some towers may need to be replaced. Some towers may need to be made taller. Some may need to be reinforced, which, you know, whatever that means, which definitely involves some construction in order to string, you know, some heavy new conductors onto the wires. You've got to have access roads, pads set up. So again, it's difficult to really pinpoint with precision because the information that's presented at this stage is so sort of high level. But, even DPS staff agreed that those projects rank low may still have significant impacts that would require some sort of mitigation before they could move forward.
And the one thing I want to add here is that it's a little bit of an uneven playing field right now because the three developers that came in that are non-incumbent transmission owners, they all put in a binding cost estimate as they were required to do back, I guess it was January 6th, Haley, if I got that right. Whereas the Transco, which is the incumbent transmission owners, the Central Hudson's and Niagara Mohawk, Con Edison, did not put in a binding cost estimate. And so there is some controversy there about that's not really a levelized playing field. And so and the importance of the binding cost estimate is twofold. Because one, if you go over the cost estimate, the commission has declared that the developer will eat 20% of the overrun, and of course the customers will bear 80% of the overrun. Mm. And so, if you are proposing, if you're bidding a project where you know you may have to eat 20% of the cost, you're going to build in a little extra as a backstop, if you will, as a contingency. And if you don't put in a cost estimate that's binding, well, you're not going to do that because you know you're going to be able to try to seek recovery for the whole enchilada, whatever it turns out to be. So that, I think, has to be addressed a little bit more carefully as we move through this process. But that's, I just wanted you to understand that basic difference that, there isn't a level playing field, and some would argue that because the transmission owners own all the rights away, that they have another advantage over the developers who are coming in from outside of the state.
Tune in tomorrow for the next segment of my interview with Dan Duthie and Haley Carlock.
Hey, home makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree.
Community Power is produced for Wave Farms, WGXC 90.7 FM in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Hey, home makes you feel so funny when you're walking through town and you got no money. Hey, home makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree. Hey ho, well you feel so down, picking up windfalls, crawling on the ground. Hey ho, makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree. Hey ho, well you lose your mind if you sing this song about 100 times. Hey ho, makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree.